from the Sky News Centre at 6. Germany's leader says she will greatly strengthen the country's security after the Berlin Christmas market attack in which 12 people died. A video apparently shows the terror suspect, Anis Amri, vowing to avenge Muslims killed in airstrikes. Angela Merkel also says she has spoken to the Tunisian president and told him deportations of failed asylum seekers need to be sped up.
Furthermore, I spoke to my counterpart in Tunisia and we have intensified our collaboration to combat terrorism. Those who have no right to reside in Germany will see the consequences. We will accelerate measures to increase the numbers of people deported who don't have the right to live in Germany.
Malta's Prime Minister has praised negotiators after a plane hijacking ended with passengers and crew being released unharmed. Two Libyan men had managed to smuggle pistols and a grenade on board. A specialist police team has removed nearly a quarter of a million items of terrorist and extremist content from the internet over the last 6 years. It includes propaganda and recruitment videos. The United Nations says a record 5,000 migrants are believed to have drowned in the Mediterranean Sea this year. Around 360,000 people have successfully crossed, most between Libya and Italy or Greece. In sport, it looks like former England boss Sam Allardyce is heading back into Premier League management. Earlier, he spoke to us as he arrived at Crystal Palace's training ground.
Just here to complete talks, talk to Steve, and everything goes all right, should be okay.
Be in charge, you think, for the Watford game?
Well, we'll wait and see. Early days, been a bit of a rush, so we'll go on.
A good job to show that you've still got what it takes in the Premier League.
If appointed, he'll replace Alan Pardew, who was sacked yesterday. And Guns N' Roses have beaten Adele to earn the most money from their global tours this year. The 80s rock group took over $5.2 million on average per city, with Adele taking home over $3.5 million. That's the latest. I'm Tanya.
BCFM.
This is Radio Freedom.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. German police and intelligence services, this week's winner of allowing a top terror suspect to kill innocent people again. As if you believe what the German police and security services are saying, how many of us have to die before these securocrats are sacked? The Russian ambassador to Turkey also assassinated with this Christmas market attack in Berlin as well. But mounting questions about both events, which throw doubt on the competence of those who are supposed to be looking after us. Same with the 7/7 London bombings, wasn't it? Egyptian police also arrest a film crew faking scenes in Syria, pretending to be in Syria anyway, while the real Aleppo, scores of Western intelligence officers paid with our taxpayers' money, are arrested by their Syrian Arab army whilst being evacuated from Aleppo with the terrorists. Also, the final frontier. For what? Propaganda? We take a look at the weaponization of space and how the US is hyping the threat from Russia and China whilst making the running in the weaponization space race. So, was this what the man on the moon was really all about? A cover for Nazi boffin Wernher von Braun's post-war NASA mission to dominate and weaponize space? And is the US missile defence system being installed in Eastern Europe going to spark the next Cuban missile crisis? Our sister show Dialects here on BCFM at 93.2 at noon every Tuesday. This week, Bristol's best kept Christmas secret near the arches on Gloucester Road. And the top paediatrician who was sacked by the NHS cuts managers for looking after his patients. How about that for a reason to sack somebody, eh? And emailing a prayer to his staff. (Music) If you want some real good Christmassy stuff, tomorrow, Saturday 24th of December at 4 p.m, Christmas celebration for children and families with music, storytelling and Christingle candles with a wonderful atmosphere. It's a great beginning to the family Christmas celebration. Even if you haven't got a family, you can still go. That's taking place at St Matthew's Church, Clare Road in Kingsdown in Bristol, just quite near the Arches, which we were just talking about, and which we'll be talking about Tim Tiley, who's got a warehouse down there, or not far away, on Tuesday on the Dialect Show. But look, Martin, first of all, we've got to talk about Monday this week, where we had a bit of a double whammy, didn't we?
Presumably you're referring to the attacks in Berlin and in Ankara. Well, yes, and of course the fact when these things happen at the same time, that may also be significant as well.
I'll tell you why I think you may be right there, and that is because the Berlin Christmas market attack completely knocked assassination of the Russian ambassador totally off the headlines. I noticed the next day's newspapers, there was nobody that had it as a number one story. That was always sort of pushed back into the newspaper, off the headline.
Yeah, and you've had various US officials basically saying that we have to hit Putin and hit him hard, blah, blah, blah. And both the Russian and Turkish media are pretty firmly pointing the finger at NATO for the potentially being behind the assassination of Karlov. The attacks in Berlin, we again had this situation where a terrorist, supposedly a professional terrorist, leaves his own documentation in the cab, like the Koachi brothers in Berlin, or like Mohammed Atta's passport, which turned up on 9/11. And then, of course, immediately we have a whole story about, oh, yes, we knew all about him all along, it's this guy, blah, 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 blah. And everybody said, and of course, then people say, oh, well, why were you so incompetent? Why didn't you catch him? Well, it may very well be, I suggest to people listening, that they know exactly what's going on. It's not even clear that this guy did it. We've been told that he did it, and he's now dead because he's been assassinated in Italy, I understand, this afternoon. So we're never going to find out.
Well, that was early hours of this morning. But yeah, let's start with the Berlin and lorry attack. First of all, yeah, there's all sorts of very strange stuff been going on about who was actually the driver, because the person that the German police were telling us for the first 24 hours after that attack, it looks as if even they didn't really believe he did it. So why that first 24 hours is quite crucial. Why would we be being told it was done by some Pakistani who actually all he'd done apparently was jump a red light?
Well, I don't know. This is a question that needs to be answered. Now, the fact is that the police ought to have an independent investigative power to look into this, and that one of the suspicions that they must have is that the secret services have orchestrated the attack. And people shouldn't say, oh, that's conspiracy theory, we don't want to hear that. We know that NATO intelligence services in the past orchestrated attacks in Germany, for example, the Dortmund Beer Hall massacre, which was in the 1990s, I believe, and various other incidents, the assassination of Herrhausen by the Red Brigades, Red Army Fraction, sorry. Many people believe that that was actually facilitated by the intelligence services because of what he was up to in terms of negotiations with Gorbachev on behalf of Kohl. Now, the point is that we don't know what happened here, but don't presume that you do know.
Also fascinating that one of the leaders of Pegida, who's the sort of equivalent of UKIP over in Germany, tweeted on Monday that the guy who German police and intelligence services only told us on Wednesday was their chief suspect.
Well, that could well be the intelligence services salting the stew, couldn't it? So they tip off the head of Pegida, wink, wink, and say, oh, we know he's going to do this, it's this guy. Oh, and then he just leaves his passport in the his ID documents in the cab. Oh, and then we found him in Italy, oh, now he's dead. Ah, well, what that suggests to me is it's an orchestrated attack, but not. And don't forget that we know that the Islamist extremists that are operating in Syria have all been armed and trained by our own intelligence services. The story that you also mentioned at the top of the hour about the GCC and Gulf Cooperation Council and NATO intelligence officers arrested in Aleppo is very fascinating. Now, all we have at the moment is the Syrians' word for this, so let's just put a word of caution into this. But they've certainly given the names of the people they say they've captured, including one US citizen and one Israeli citizen, and lots of Saudi citizens.
Another thing which, of course, is possible, because the original lorry driver, a Polish guy's body, was found in the cab, and yet it seems that they didn't search the cab, the German police, and didn't find the ID of Anis Amri, who they're now saying did it.
Well, they did in the end search the cab and find it. Also, now, you see, the point is, it could be that the police planted the ID, or it could be that the ID was planted by somebody else. But in any case, I think there's a big alarm bell that should be ringing. Terrorists do not go off to carry out attacks taking their documents with them. And then when they've carried out the attack, they don't leave their documents where like the Kouachi brothers supposedly left their documents in the getaway car.
Well, and yesterday, the German police were saying, oh, we've also, it's not just the ID card, we also found some fingerprints.
Well, this makes me begin
another
to
24 hours.
Well, this
later.
Begins to make me suspect that the police are in on it. Now, that doesn't mean the police aren't always in on it. I mean, in Nice, for example, in a similar kind of attack, the local police were told by the DGSC, the French Secret Service, that they should wipe the video footage of the attack. And, of course, the locals will say, well, why would we want to do that?
It didn't necessarily happen here at all, did it? I mean, there wasn't any CCTV in this, and that's another aspect
that's
to all
right.
of this, is that on Wednesday this week, there's been an acceptance by the German politicians that they are now going to roll out CCTV right across all major German cities.
Indeed, and that might be part of the plan and the purpose behind all of this attack. In France, local police actually arrested what they thought was an ISIS cell. They found ISIS flags, everything you might find for an ISIS cell, and it turned out that they were just part of an exercise being run by the intelligence services, reported in the local press in the south of France. I think we might be able to get a link up on our show page later to that, but hardly reported to anybody else.
Well, we certainly will do, Martin. We will make sure there is a link to that, because, you know, it's always great to be able to follow these things up on our show page, which is thisweek.org.uk. And also, I think it's very useful to have a look at this character, Anis Amri, to find out who it is all about, because I think there's a lot of journalists who've been covering this from around the world. They're absolutely gobsmacked to find that the person that they've been told was behind it wasn't behind it at all, and actually the person who was behind it, apparently, the security services in Germany have been following for months and months, and all even tried to deport him. That wasn't just following him, they knew that he was planning acts of terror.
And then, all of a sudden, just like in Nice, where the police were blocking off the corniche and then suddenly moved their vehicles so that this vehicle suddenly turns up and crashes into it, suddenly this guy, who's been watched for months, supposedly, suddenly he's not watched at all in the moment when he does this attack. Although, of course, we're not sure he did do the attack. We've just been told.
Let's go back to the 7-7 London bombings for a minute, because we had three of the four suspects for the 7-7 London bombings were also being watched and watched by MI5 for months. In fact, years, two of them, beforehand, and yet we were told at the time, oh, sorry, we didn't know anything about this guy.
Well, it's quite possible that they were recruited by MI5. This is the issue, isn't it? And people say, oh, the intelligence services don't do things like that. And I say, yes, they do. We've got documentary evidence, police investigations in Italy, Belgium and elsewhere.
Well, on last week's show, we actually pointed out,
without a shadow of a doubt, that NATO intelligence services have engaged in terrorism.
On last week's show, we pointed out, and The Guardian pointed out, all the mainstream press briefly pointed out, that the £3,000 funding for the Brussels terror attacks actually came from MI5 themselves.
Yes, indeed. And the guy who supplied the money for them and working for MI5 has just been sent down.
And the only reason he was sent down is because the judge held that information out from the... Even though we all know it now, held it away from the jury.
Well, the suspicion has got to be that MI5 and other intelligence agencies from the West orchestrated the attack, because they certainly knew it was going to take place if they supplied the funding. Wouldn't you suggest?
What would you say are the characteristics of a Gladio C style attack? This is the idea of Gladio A taking place mostly in the 1970s. Gladio B, Sybil Edmonds talks about as this operation against a lot of Eastern European countries and countries around Afghanistan, places like that, Islamist terrorists over there, and now this new form in Europe.
Yeah. Gladio C, as you may call it.
What are the fingerprints of that?
The supposed perpetrators, both the assassination of the Russian ambassador and of this attack in Berlin, are extremists of the Islamist variety, at least ostensibly, but which we know to have intimate linkages with the Turkish secret services MIT and with our own secret services MI6, who've been recruiting them and sending them out there to overthrow Assad. And I don't think there's any doubt about that that's what they've been doing. In fact, they've been trumpeting from the rooftops that they have been doing it.
Well, what about people who say this is just blowback? This is just people who are now... maybe they can't carry on fighting in places like Syria, so they've now come back to Europe.
Well, that's the minimum that you could say about this, is that you have created these groups, like Al-Nusra or Al-Sham, Al-Qaeda in East Aleppo. We have been presented by the liberal media here, including The Guardian, etc., that these people are freedom fighters and they're trying to liberate Syria from the terrible oppression of Assad and all the rest of it, but they are Al-Qaeda, who is supposedly has been fighting since 2001. We've killed millions of people to try and get Al-Qaeda, but it just turns out that we are working with them directly. And Petraeus, who was in charge in Iraq and Afghanistan, saying, well, I think we should openly support Al-Qaeda in Syria. I mean, they are supporting Al-Qaeda, but they're saying, well, we should openly support them. Now, if people can't see what's wrong with that, then they need a word with themselves. We are under assault
to the original
but
question?
But it's not from caves in Afghanistan, is it?
The original question, which is what do the fingerprints of a Gladio C-style attack here in Europe, in Britain or in Europe, look like?
Well, I think one of the obvious things is when things that you can't quite believe are a part of the story, like the so-called professional terrorists who carry out a professional hit like the Kouachi brothers did in Paris, then take their documents with them at all and then leave the documents in a getaway car so that they can be immediately identified, then assassinated, and then that's the end. We've solved the problem. Like, see this guy's been killed now? It means we're never going to find out what happened in this incident.
Well,
the incident is now closed.
There won't be any trial.
There won't be any trial or any further investigation. We now know what happened, so everybody can... Nothing to see here, folks. We know what happened here. It's this guy. He did it. End of discussion. But, of course, that's not the end of the discussion. And, of course...
It certainly won't be on this show.
No.
Anyway, let's go to Wednesday evening's ITV News, because they did quite an interesting report. Who is this guy? Anis Amri, 24 years old, a Tunisian asylum seeker in Germany, who is supposed to have carried out this attack in the Christmas market in Berlin on Monday.
His name is Anis Amri, though he uses six different aliases. He's Tunisian, but with fake documents claims three nationalities. He sounds mysterious, but he's well known to German authorities as a suspected criminal. Today, a state minister said the suspect was well known to them for links to Islamist extremism.
Die Sicherheitsbehörden haben ihre Erkenntnis und ihre Information zu dieser Person.
The security agencies exchanged information about this person in the counter-terrorism centre in November, he said. The local state officials for criminal investigations eventually initiated proceedings with federal prosecutors because of suspicion of preparation for a criminal offence endangering national security. He was identified not through advanced investigation, but from a discarded document left in the cab of a lorry. A day after it was removed, the crime scene cleared. Only now are his details being circulated. Anis Amri was born in 1992 in Tunisia, but left 7 years ago. He arrived in Germany in July last year and moved to Berlin in February. His application for asylum was rejected 6 months ago because authorities in his home country denied he was a Tunisian citizen. He was awaiting replacement ID papers, which German officials confirmed had arrived today. The German foreign minister laid a single rose, but his government cannot explain why the attacker wasn't stopped.
Can you reflect on the mood in Berlin?
Okay, sorry. He's given a statement.
Would you like to say anything about the investigation? It seems that a suspect being identified three days on is...
I think he has given a statement and that's fine.
But he's views on the investigation.
What this? I mean, as I said, the minister has given a statement. You've been there, so that's fine.
The suspect was known to have links to the man thought to be featured in this video.
Meine Bruder,
a 32-year-old Iraqi who was arrested last month and is described as Germany's IS leader. The agony is compounded by the questions. Could what happened here have been prevented? And will it ever be explained? Rohit Katru, ITV News, Berlin.
Yes, that was a report on Wednesday. Martin Rohit, we did a really good job there, actually. He went and approached the German Foreign Minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, as he was laying a white rose at the scene, saying, well, what went wrong? Why has it taken you 3 days after the attack to actually tell the world who you're looking for? And then suddenly, within another 24 hours, this guy's been shot dead.
Well, we're also presuming that he actually did it. which of course is not proven at all.
I mean, why is the
foreign minister... That's who they're saying who did it.
Why has the foreign minister got nothing to say? He was sort of looking very sheepish behind, and he was just sort of wanting to get out of
the
camera.
Well, it's quite possible that Steinmeier is quite a sophisticated character. He may know more than he's allowed to say. And he may suspect what we suspect, as people. I'm trying to think now that the German former minister, who's very aware of these kind of issues, 9/11 included. I'm racking my brain for him.
Andreas von Bülow, former German defence minister.
Steinmeier's sophisticated enough probably to understand the kind of argument we're making, but then he's not in a position to say anything, even if he knows anything.
So he's got to... I mean, surely he could explain, at least to give some idea of why it's taken the German authorities so long to even just identify the person who's clearly the main...
He was identified because they found a document in the cab, and I stress again, when did you ever hear, for example, of provisional IRA terrorists leaving their documents around when they go out and carry out attacks? Why would you do that? Why would you even take a document with you if you're going on an operation like that? You wouldn't.
Is there any prospect of the German authorities being sacked for not... I mean, this guy, as we were just hearing there, is a close associate of the leader of Islamic State in Germany.
So they say. So they say. In other words, we've now been given a complete story. This is an IS attack. He's linked to this guy that has already been blamed to be IS.
I mean, it's okay. Look, even if it isn't true, it just sounds like that some heads need to roll in Germany if it is true.
Yeah, but you're presuming that the basis of the story is true. It could very well be that the BND, working with MI6 and others, coordinated this whole attack, as the SISMI used to do in Italy. And that's the sort of thing that serious police officers ought to be asking.
The other thing is, it's not impossible that this Scania lorry was actually hacked and driven remotely.
Indeed, that's possible. I mean, that can be done, can't it? And, of course, it also bears similarities with the attack in Nice. And the purpose of this, of course, attacking a Christmas market with a supposed Muslim attacker, is to reinforce this narrative that Western Christian civilization is under attack, where it's very dangerous, and now I'm afraid we're going to need more powers, we're going to need
lots
more CCTV,
of money, lots of money to be spent,
blah, blah,
on
blah, loads more money to be spent on our activities. I mean, you'd have thought, with all of the incompetence being shown by the intelligence services, they shouldn't get any more budget for all of this.
Well,
but no, they will get more budget.
The intelligence services
they?
Will be saying is, we need more money to be able to follow more people. We just didn't have enough money to fund this guy.
But it could well be that they're orchestrating the attacks. And this is the sort of thing that it's absolutely legitimate for us to mention. We know that the Red Army fraction was infiltrated. We know that Loyalist and Republican factions in Ireland were infiltrated. We know that the Red Brigades were infiltrated. We know that Al-Qaeda was set up to fight in Afghanistan in the 1980s by the Western intelligence services, but they claim they lost control of them, even though they're still working with them in Syria today.
Also, Russia's ambassador to Turkey is assassinated by apparently an off-duty police officer in front of terrified witnesses in apparently a retaliation for the crisis in Aleppo. First of all, Martin, I suppose the obvious question is, if this guy was an off-duty police officer, how was he able to sort of pose as someone who was part of the ambassador's security detail, Mr. Karloff's security detail?
Well, because he was an insider, he managed to infiltrate himself in, but no doubt he had some help to get in there. But neither the Russians nor the Turks accept that this is an individual who's just done this on his own bat. Both of them suspect Fethi Gulen, who's a CIA asset based in US. It may be that it suits both parties to point the finger in that direction, so you can't necessarily take that face value either.
Some have pointed out that pictures of him shot afterwards lying on the floor, he seems to have a couple of day old stubble on that body, and yet this guy, when he shot him a few minutes before, didn't have any stubble. He was clean shaven.
Well, it may be that the chaps escaped. And that in actual fact, whoever did it, whoever they say they've shot. I mean, isn't it funny that they shoot these people? What I'd want to do if I was the police, I'd want to arrest them and interrogate them.
I mean, if he was a follower of
but
the
Gulen... But of course, if they're all dead.
If he was a police
nothing
officer...
Nothing more to be done, is there?
If he was a police officer who was a follower of the Gulen movement, how come he hadn't been purged by Erdogan after the coup?
Well, apparently he had been purged. I understand that he had been purged, and that's the story that both Turks and Russians are sticking to at the minute. But of course, they're both pointing the finger at the CIA there. Can the elected leadership of Russia and the elected leadership of Turkey say the CIA are assassins? I think they can, because the CIA are assassins. They've always been assassins.
During the attack, he said, I'm just trying to find his name again, actually. It's Melvut Mert Altintas. That was the name of the assassin. All caught on film, of course. He said, don't forget Aleppo. Don't forget Syria. So long as our brothers are not in safety, you'll not taste safety either. Only my dead body will leave here. Anyone who has a role in this oppression, they will all die one by one. Well, apparently, part of that, anyway, is similar to the unofficial anthem of the Al-Nusra Front.
Indeed. And so he was working with Al-Nusra, as were British Special Forces until very recently, the White Helmets, set up by James Le Mesurier, based in Turkey, cooperating with MIT, like this chap, and the Al-Nusra Front. And as an ambassador dead. And I suppose what the Russians could say is, well, British ambassadors, watch your backs, eh? Watch your backs.
The conclusion that some have come to, Martin, is that Western governments, diplomats and media directed the gun that murdered the ambassador Andrei Karlov.
Well, that's being said by the pro-government press in Turkey and the pro-government press in Russia.
What does this mean for Turkey's alignment, east or west?
Well, if it was an attempt to... I think what's happened with this is it's actually pushed the Russians and the Turks together. So if it was an attempt to push them apart, it wasn't very successful. But I think because of the success of Russian arms in Syria, there's an element within the Western intelligence services that wants to punish Russia, even though it doesn't serve a useful purpose. They just feel that they have to actually respond, otherwise the Russians are getting away with stuff. So I think that's probably the most likely explanation of what we've got here. But we don't know, and probably we never will know what really went on.
Well, I don't agree with you. I think often these things do come out in the mix.
Well, they do sometimes, and sometimes they don't, Tony. But I think the presumption... Erdogan, for example, after the Paris attacks, he made a speech in Paris where he said he felt that the hands of the Israelis were involved in the attack. It wasn't widely reported in Western media, it was reported in Turkey. And of course, it's perfectly legitimate and reasonable for a Turkish president to imagine that Israel might be involved in terrorist attacks in France. Perfectly reasonable. But you talk to mainstream media in the West, and they go, oh, no, it couldn't possibly be true. No, they don't do things like that. I say, oh, yes, they do. They do. Everybody does. They're all doing it.
Also, Egyptian police this week have arrested a film crew faking Syria scenes over in Egypt. So what was that all about? That's pretty shocking. Very, very little reporting on that, but it certainly seems to be pretty well documented. The Egyptians found these people doing some filming with some children and fake blood and arrested them.
Yeah, well, that's because the Egyptian military are starting to align with the Syrian military to defeat, Islamist extremism. So one of the things they're doing is trying to catch them creating these kind of fake news stories. But, of course, we've also had this little girl, 7-year-old girl, based inside eastern Aleppo, who's been tweeting madly for weeks about how terrible it is in eastern Aleppo in perfect English and immediately being picked up by all these kind of top journalists and celebrities. And that they've not been able to find any trace of her in eastern Aleppo. And also, of course, the White Helmets.
What do you mean they've not been able to find any?
They've
trace
not been
of her.
Able to find any trace of her. She's suddenly gone off the Twitter sphere. She was a 7-year-old, and she was blogging with all this. Well,
let's also remember the Pentagon was paying Bell Pottinger, wasn't it, hundreds of millions of pounds to create fake films, fake footage for the news.
They've been interviewing all of these people who've been liberated from East Aleppo and said, "Well, what do you think of the White Helmets?" And they go, "What? They never even heard of them."
I think it might be a good time to put link on our show page back to that article, because Bell Pottinger, strategic communication company, big public relations firm, it's pretty obvious that they have been manufacturing, filming fake footage, dramatising footage and then presenting it as news.
Yeah, and of course when they do things like that with our money, because it's our taxes that pay for that, then we're definitely suspects in things like the Berlin truck attack, aren't they? If you're going to lie like that to confuse the public with our resources, then we've got, it's perfectly legitimate for the police to presume that you may well be behind the attacks as well and go after you.
The team in Egypt admitted to the Egyptian police they plan to distribute their work on social media, pretending it showed scenes of injured and destruction in Aleppo, the embattled northern Syrian city, which has just fallen back under government control. It was not immediately clear what charges have been brought against the five people, and the Independent contacted the Egyptian authorities for clarification in a distinctly amateur raw video and stills recorded by the Interior Ministry. An 8-year-old girl wears a white dress and bandages covered in red stains and holds a teddy bear. A 12-year-old boy is also interviewed about what life is like under intensive Russian-backed Syrian government airstrikes.
Yeah, except there are no Russian government airstrikes in Egypt, are there?
Also, this week we've heard of a whole load of intelligence officers from the West being arrested in eastern Aleppo. This is coming up from the Syrian government.
It is, and therefore we've only got one source for it. But if they have in fact got an Israeli, an American and a bunch of Saudis and Qataris under arrest, then it'll be very interesting to see what happens. I mean, previously I think they have arrested people and caught people, but they've just been exchanged behind the scenes. What the Syrians are planning to be doing in this situation is saying, right, we've got these people, what do you want us to do with them? Should we charge them with terrorism? Or would you like to negotiate with us about what's happening?
Mostly Americans, Israelis, also from the Gulf states. But these intelligence officers, what exactly have they been doing in there? And, I mean, of course, this is, again,
pretending to be the white helmets and providing support for the anti-tank and anti-aircraft kit that the rebels have been using.
We know that the West's been helping with all sorts of targeting and that sort of thing, so maybe they're just helping the, for example, helping the terrorists to know when the Syrian Arab Army or the Russians are going to attack on a particular front.
Well, there was an attack upon a Russian hospital which killed Russian medical personnel a couple of weeks ago. And the Russians definitely suspected, because normally the rebels were just firing at random into the not into government-controlled territory, hitting anything they could hit. But on this particular occasion, they got a very direct hit on this Russian hospital. And the Syrians and the Russians are pretty convinced that that was because of NATO giving basically information
in the background to all of this. The UK is secretly selling arms to Saudi Arabia and elsewhere under an opaque licensing system. This is reported last weekend. The military and defence industry is a major player in the UK economy, worth about $7.7 billion a year, something like half of that money coming from Saudi Arabia. Many of the countries buying British arms are run by governments with dubious human rights records. According to the I newspaper, an increasing number of military consignments are being sold under the Open Individual Export Licence after quiet government encouragement in 2015, despite criticism from MPs. Under these licences, numerous consignments can be exported to one destination under a single licence for up to 5 years after initial scrutiny. They're supposed to be less sensitive goods, but campaigners say this is not appropriate for deadly weapons.
Well, quite. And you know, that's been going on for years. Part of our entanglement with the Saudi regime, which it certainly is, they don't have elections in Saudi Arabia, is partly from there's a lot of money to be made. You know, plenty of ministers have got fingers in pies like British Aerospace and so on. So there's money to be made. And also there's the general strategy of aligning with Islamist terrorism of the Salafi Wahhabi variety as part of the general geopolitical struggle against the resistance axis in the Middle East, Chinese and Russian you know, misbehaviour as they see
with Syria,
elsewhere.
Turkish air raids have killed 47 civilians, we hear today from Press TV, in Syria's Al Bab. This is a monitoring group saying this. Turkish jets conducted fresh airstrikes on Syria's northwest city of Al Bab, leaving 47 civilians dead, another act of aggression against the Arab country. The so-called Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said 14 children and 9 women were among the fatalities of Thursday's aerial assaults. Turkish warplanes regularly carry out airstrikes in support of their ground incursion into Syria. Now, one does wonder if the Turks and the Russians are going to start firing air-to-air missiles at some point at each other, Martin.
Well, it may be that the fact is that the Turks are flying into Syria and not being shot down by the Russians, which they could easily be. So I think there's a kind of understanding between them about who's allowed to do what and where. Otherwise, they'd already been knocking them down.
Also, the US Army is deploying tanks to Europe. Hey, thanks, guys. Ratcheting up tensions with Russia. They've been wanting the Americans to, the Pentagon anyway, to get the Europeans to fight the Russians ever since the end of World War II and Churchill's mad idea that he wanted to nuke Moscow, haven't they?
Well, yes, but of course this is more recent. I mean, in military terms,
this is last week. Yeah,
yeah. In military terms, the so-called build-up by NATO in Eastern Europe is ludicrous.
Well, the US Army in Europe is due to deploy a total of 4,000 American troops and 2,000 vehicles on a rotational basis to Poland, Romania, Bulgaria and the Baltic nations.
Yeah, but
NATO
I mean,
forces will move to the Baltic states in early spring.
Yeah, but the point is that none of these forces are sufficiently robust to take on the Russian military. No way, Jose. Now, the Russian military, in fact, has no intention of invading any of these countries, so a lot of this is essentially grandstanding. It's just as well that the Russians are very calm, because they could take offence at all of this, because it's basically directed at them. It's sabre-rattling, as Steinmeier, who we mentioned earlier, has called it. But the fact is that it's of no military threat to the Russians whatsoever. What is a military threat is the anti-missile missiles which have been put into Poland and Romania, which could potentially start a first strike, nuclear strike on the US
Federation. US forces plan to conduct more than 90 manoeuvres with NATO allies and European partners next year, including Swift Response 17 in July, to test the NATO rapid response units. Swift response exercises designed to demonstrate NATO's ability to respond to a crisis within 18 hours of notification. The deployment breaches the NATO-Russia Founding Act 1997 by signing the document NATO pledged not to seek additional permanent stationing of substantial ground forces in the nations closer to Russia.
Yeah, in other words, this is a symbolic flouting of an agreement with the Russians. It's got no military significance. I can imagine the Russian military just rolling their eyes as they watch these twerps go about their business. But, of course, what it is a deliberate tweaking of the nose of the Russians, because they've got an agreement with the Russians that they're not going to put these kind of forces in, but they're putting them in. And they're doing it on the back of what happened in Ukraine and so on.
The post-9/11 world, we started off with Afghanistan and Iraq, places quite far away, but it looks as if the Americans are moving their troops and their bases and building bases closer and closer to, obviously here in Europe, but also around China too. This whole thing sort of kicked off with 9/11, and I thought it would be interesting to see what Donald Trump has had to say about 9/11 since he's about to take over as US president next year. So let's have a listen now to a phone call that Donald Trump made to a US radio station, or TV station I think it actually was, on 9/11 itself. So this is Donald Trump speaking on September the 11th back in 2001.
Well, it was an architectural defect. You know, the World Trade Center was always known as a very, very strong building. Don't forget, that took a big bomb in the basement. Now, the basement is the most vulnerable place because that's your foundation. And it withstood that. And I got to see that area about 3 or 4 days after it took place, because one of my structural engineers actually took me for a tour because he did the building. And I said, I can't believe it. The building was standing solid and half of the columns were blown out. I mean, so this was an unbelievably powerful building. If you know anything about structure, it was one of the first buildings that was built from the outside. The steel, the reason the World Trade Center had such narrow windows is that in between all the windows you had the steel on the outside. So you had the steel on the outside of the building. That's why when I first looked, and you had big, heavy I-beams, when I first looked at it, I couldn't believe it because there was a hole in the steel. And this is steel that was, you remember the width of the windows in the World Trade Center, folks? I think, you know, if you were ever up there, they were quite narrow. And in between was this heavy steel. I said, how could a plane, even a 767 or 747 or whatever it might have been, how could it possibly go through the steel? I happen to think that they had not only a plane, but they had bombs that exploded almost simultaneously, because I just can't imagine anything being able to go through that wall. Most buildings are built with the steel is on the inside around the elevator shaft. This one was built from the outside, which is the strongest structure you can have. And it was almost just like a can of soup.
You know, Donald.
So, in other words, Donald Trump, who does know something about skyscrapers, pointed out the obvious, that in actual fact these buildings couldn't possibly have been brought down by planes crashing into them, which of course is the position of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, headed by Richard Gage, the architect, which has been campaigning on this issue for many years.
Well, what he's effectively saying is he thinks that there were bombs that went off in the building that allowed the planes to penetrate into the middle of the building. I think that's what he's saying, isn't it?
Well, he's saying that the planes themselves couldn't possibly have brought the building down.
there were bombs in the buildings. There's no doubt about
that. Yeah. And there were bombs in the building. I think that's pretty clear. Anybody who knows anything about this would draw the relevant conclusion, including Donald Trump. And of course, the bombs in the building were not placed there by people from Afghanistan. They were placed there by somebody on the inside, the people who had access to the building, the people who owned the building, Larry Silverstein and his cabal of investors, who got a massive insurance payout on the back of this terrorist attack, which they, of course, probably orchestrated.
Yeah, and also he was looking at an enormous bill to remove asbestos from the World Trade Center, and he decided...
all of the steel from the building was carted away by Rudy Giuliani, who was mayor of New York at the time, and sent to China to be turned into, you know, our Christmas presents this year, no doubt. That was actually wrong, because you'd have thought when buildings like that collapse, you'd want to know how, you'd want to know why, you'd want to look into why these buildings just suddenly collapse like that.
Certainly,
and why are skyscrapers still open?
Martin,
if skyscrapers can just collapse like that, we should close them all down, shouldn't we?
Certainly, if 9/11 is anything to go by, it's massively changed the US foreign policy. It's given them what they feel anyway is a carte blanche, not only to deploy over in places like Afghanistan, Iraq, the Middle East, all over Africa, etc., but in Europe too. Anyway, so I just thought we'd take a look, because quite a few people have asked me over the last few months about why am I not appearing on Russia Today anymore. So I thought I'd kind of scratch my head and ask myself the same question, and I'll play you now one of the penultimate clips of me being on Russia Today channel, where I was asked to comment on a British report into the death of Alexander Litvinenko, the Russian spy who was poisoned with polonium here in London. And this is what I had to say.
The absolute nub of this issue is the research that Litvinenko had been doing into the Moscow-Ryazan bombings of 1999, which helped spark the Chechen War, a terrorist attack that happened in Russia in 1999. The book he wrote, Blowing Up Russia, most of your listeners won't have time to have read it, but I did. And you'll find in there that there is evidence that actually points to Putin being behind those attacks, but also to Boris Berezovsky, who was removed as a criminal from Russia by Putin, and he found his home in London. Now, when Berezovsky was in London, he was being funded by two people we know about. One was the Duke of Kent, and probably the security services too. So what Litvinenko was saying effectively was that possibly Berezovsky was the main instigator of these attacks in Russia, not Putin. So I would advise people that want to look deeper into this to look at this book, Blowing Up Russia, but also to bear in mind that Berezovsky may have been the main instigator of those terrorist attacks. Certainly his death, Berezovsky, in 2013 here in London, was very suspicious. It may have put Berezovsky out of the way, because he had some very important evidence that he could possibly have given that would have made this inquest and this public inquiry much more interesting, where many secrets would have come out.
Yeah, so that's me speaking earlier this year on RT, Rush Today channel. Martin, these attacks, the Moscow bombings, they were basically massive blocks of flats which were blown to pieces in 1999. There were several of these attacks, but they were a kind of 9/11 for Russia. Many people haven't heard of them.
Yeah, I would refer to them as 999, because they all happened in September 99. So if you wanted to have a moniker for them, that's what you would say is 999. You've got to remember what the political situation was in Russia at that stage, which was that prior to the Zyuganov and the Communist Party were set fair to win the 1998 elections in Russia, and Putin came forward as a result of machinations by Berezovsky and others. And at that stage...
Well, Putin was from the FSB.
But in other words, the oligarchy got very panicked that the Communist Party was going to win the election in Russia. Now, in actual fact, that wouldn't have been abnormal in the rest of Europe, Eastern Europe, including in Poland, for example. The former communists had won the second election. Once people had a good taste of Thatcherism over there, and I used to work over there, they got pretty disillusioned pretty damn quickly. And therefore, they started to think in terms of going back to some aspects of the old system. Now, there was a big lobby of oligarchs in Russia and Western advisors and Western intelligence services who were absolutely horrified by that idea. How can we explain to the ordinary folk of Britain that the Russians have just re-elected the Communist Party? So we'll have to do something to stop this. So they all did. They all got together and stopped it. At that stage, Putin was seen as a cat's paw for Western intelligence services. Because what Zyuganov said in the election campaign was, this is now a straight fight between the KGB and the Communist Party.
Well,
and I call upon people to vote for the Communist Party.
Putin took over as president in 2000, and then he kind of turned the tables on Berezovsky, didn't he? Pretty much straight away.
Yeah, I think what happened was Putin represents what's called the Siloviki, which are the kind, you know, the old intelligence structure of the country. And they were happy enough to go along with whatever was required to prevent the communists taking power. But then they also had their own views about what the oligarchy should and shouldn't be doing. And they basically said to the oligarchy, Berezovsky being the leader of the oligarchy, we are now in charge. You've messed things up. It's time for us to run the show.
As one of the top people at the FSB when Putin was there, and also as acting prime minister, to allow Berezovsky to get away with these attacks, Berezovsky may have thought, well, hey, this guy, I can trust him. He can be my puppet.
That's what he thought, but Putin was smarter than he was. Now, Berezovsky, I think, was murdered by MI6, because what Berezovsky was saying quite frequently was that, why don't we use this stuff against Putin? We know he was involved in these kind of attacks, because I was involved with them too. But, of course, Berezovsky's got a big mouth, basically, and eventually is becoming an embarrassment. Because Putin's obvious response to that is, we know everything that happened on 9/11. Do you want us to start talking about that?
Yes, he certainly was being paid he was working for MI6, Litvinenko. That BBC dug that
I think
out.
He murdered Litvinenko as well, because he's trying to set Putin
one
up.
One thing I would say, though, is Berezovsky, I said on there that the Duke of Kent was paying Berezovsky. It was the other way round. Duke of Kent, of course, is a major figure in Anglo-Russian relations. He speaks fluent Russian. He's the top Freemason in Britain, the Duke of Kent as well.
Yeah, and I think, don't forget that when the police investigated the Litvinenko case and they found polonium, and you've asked yourself the question, why would anybody use polonium, which is so traceable, to murder somebody? But they found traces of polonium in Berezovsky's office. In other words, I think Berezovsky murdered Litvinenko in order to create an incident with Putin, because he was running out of options, Berezovsky. He wanted to replace Putin, and he was that ambitious.
And he was running out of money.
Yeah.
Having been a very rich person in
Russia.
But I
mean, because he was becoming a loose cannon.
There is a point
because
here,
he was
Martin,
going on and on and on about 999.
There's a point here, Martin, and that is that it's a pity that you can't. It's very difficult to criticise Putin or even talk about, for example, the Russian Communist Party on RT. All of these major mainstream media nowadays, they really do seem to be quite propagandistic. They're just pushing their point of view.
Well, I think that...
But don't you think that maybe in any kind of coming war, if there is an international news service out there that will criticise their own people as well, that they could well win that war? Because so much of it is an information war.
It is, and what happens is, by playing one off against another, we can gradually get the truth out there. I think Berezovsky was largely responsible for 999. I think Putin may have had a hand in it, but he wasn't the main player. And I think that behind what you've got to remember, that when the bombs went off in Moscow in 1999, the people behind it were very similar to the oligarchs who planted bombs in Bologna railway station in 1980. It was virtually exactly the same NATO game plan. We've got to stop the communists winning elections, so we've got to kill some ordinary people. Same in Russia, same in Italy.
Getting bigger by being better. The number one choice for Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2.
Anyway, we're going to talk space wars now. And our first clip is from this documentary just out from CNN, a very dramatic film, and it's called War in Space, The Next Battlefield. What they do there, Martin, is they give us an idea of what a sort of a cyberspace attack will be coming from space, and also kind of crippling US satellites, that kind of thing.
As the sun sets and the nation goes to sleep, the battle for supremacy in space is about to begin. One final night before Americans wake up to a new and daunting reality. 10 a.m. New York, 7 a.m. Los Angeles. Cities normally buzzing with the morning rush suddenly stall. TV networks start to go dark. Internet connections run slow. ATMs begin to malfunction. There's confusion. No panic, not yet. As stealth cyber attacks are racing through the U.S. at the speed of light.
Then you have the question of, is it a cascading effect or not?
By noon in New York and 9 a.m. in Los Angeles, financial markets, dependent on exact timing provided by GPS, are frozen. Mobile phone services, already patchy, fail. Confusion gives way to growing fears this is much more than a simple cyber glitch. Many traffic lights and railroad signals, also timed by GPS, default to red, bringing transport to a standstill. Commercial air traffic is grounded as pilots lose navigation and weather data. Power stations and water treatment plants begin to stop functioning.
This feels like utter science fiction, and yet it's not.
Promoting track 1-2.
By now, Americans know the country is under some kind of attack.
This is Sivers. We are taking a space launch on it.
And they look to the armed forces to spring into action.
Stand by. Data building is closed.
But the world's greatest military is struggling to respond. Military pilots and drones lose contact with the ground. GPS-guided smart bombs are rendered dumb. Warships lose contact with commanders. This is the nightmare scenario. Chaos on Earth as our adversaries launch a massive cyber attack on key infrastructure and disable and destroy our satellites in space. The first shots in the first space war.
Well, that was a clip there from the documentary War in Space, the Next Battlefield, from CNN last month. And that gives you an idea of what they think it would be like. But there is another documentary from a couple of years ago, which gives a completely different view to CNN, the official sort of primetime mainstream TV view. And that documentary is called Pax Americana and the Weaponization of Space. It starts by looking at the origins of space war with the Nazis and the V2. Taking what they call the ultimate high ground.
Space then has been called the ultimate high ground, and the advantage to the state that can seize and maintain the high ground is the same as holding the high ground throughout history, whether that was a hill, a mountain, or in the latter half of the 20th century, the air space.
September 6, 1944, armed with over a ton of high explosives, Germany's first tactical rocket, now called the V2, the vengeance weapon, is fired at London.
That was a clip there from the film Pax Americana and the Weaponization of Space.
Well, I mean, we know that this is going on. Both sides are engaged in it. The US openly call for full spectrum dominance in the Project for a New American Century document, and so on.
Now, the main person here we'll be talking about is Wernher von Braun, and he was the person who was right involved right at the very, very start over in the US.
Gentlemen, will you please take your seats so we can begin today's conference? I take a great deal of pleasure in presenting to you today as our guest speaker, Dr. Wernher von Braun.
Gentlemen, the conquest of outer space is the greatest technological challenge of the age in which we live. On the right side of this picture, you see a large wheel-shaped space station. This, of course, offers tremendous possibilities to reconnaissance, and both in the civilian sense as in the military sense.
These Nazi scientists, these Nazi space scientists that came to this country under Project Paperclip, developed schemes to essentially control the Earth from space with space-based weapons.
It seems even feasible to use such a platform in space as a base for the bombing of objects on the ground. And it is my opinion that such bombing could be carried out with an unprecedented accuracy from such a station.
It's the voice of Wernher von Braun there. Also, Space Command, that's the US command now that deals with space. They've got all their... it's basically like a new frontier, isn't it? What they do is they have drills now. And the astounding thing is that even though they're spending more and more money on space weapons, the threat is, in fact, diminishing.
Valid missile event.
I agree, that's a valid event. You have two per track. 0001.
Today's Air Force fights missile defense war games in which so-called rogue nations attack American cities.
Possible impact in San Francisco, sir.
In reality, who would launch such attacks against the USA?
The interesting thing is that the threat is actually shrinking, not increasing. The ballistic missile threat is declining. There are far fewer ballistic missiles in the world now than there were 15 years ago. There are fewer countries with ballistic missile programs. There are fewer hostile countries to the United States with ballistic missile programs. When you look at it, it really comes down to a handful of states whose programs we worry about, North Korea and Iran, basically, and they only have medium-range missiles. That is, they can't reach the United States.
Of course, the fact of the matter is that this has now become an offensive program, certainly not a defensive one.
What America is doing is not about defense. It's about offense. It's about an aggressive military doctrine that talks about control and domination. I really went through an entire transformation. Everything that I knew was different. But one thing wasn't different. One thing always remained. I realized I had a good heart, even as a conservative, as a young follower of the military. I had a good heart. I had a good intention. And I realized that many people in the military are that way, that they have a good heart. They mean well. They're doing what they think is the right thing to do. They want to protect the country.
There are moments that will truly test the leader within you, test whether you will take the hard path or the easy path, the wrong path, or the right path.
Most people want to have a good heart, and that when you challenge them to think, it doesn't mean that they change overnight. I didn't change overnight. It took me some time behind those gates on that military base for me to make my change, but it's all about initiating that change.
The willingness always to take the right path, even if it's the hard path, is called character. In every aspect of your life, whether personal or professional, you must always maintain the courage of your convictions, your personal integrity.
We're living in a very, very dangerous time, and there's hardly any alarm in this area across the board. I mean, people are just, they're so inundated with so many things, you know, just making a living, just getting through the day. Just trying to remain sane in all this insanity that's going on, that it's hard to get their attention and saying, wait a minute, I know you think it's bad. I got news for you. It's a lot worse. People don't want to hear that, you know. So we have to find a way to alert people to the reality of what's going on. And that's not an easy task.
Congratulations. May God watch over all of you and these United States.
Lord, we pray today that you would allow us to worship you in spirit and in truth as we go out into the world.
Well, that's the US military there kind of indoctrinating their people, Martin. But this is getting pretty much as if it's almost being rolled out last year, that is to say, well, this year really, in 2016, as the big thing to be worried about. There could be a massive cyber attack. You have to also remember, of course, we've got smart meters in many of our homes now. That could mean that a cyber attack can just completely knock out your electricity, your gas supply, that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, the various spokesperson for the Americans have been saying, well, we ought to carry out cyber attacks on Russia to punish them for their cyber attacks on us. And, of course, it's there was an attack on the five top Russian banks a couple of weeks ago, which was thwarted by the Russian Post Office. we are, this is very dangerous because, of course, the Russians are quite right to be paranoid that they're under attack. In 1983, we nearly had a nuclear war as bad as, every bit as bad as the Cuban Missile Crisis, but nobody even heard about it. And that was because Reagan and Thatcher at the time were being very belligerent,
okay, so if
they nearly,
Martin,
provoked a nuclear war.
If there is a massive cyber attack on the West, how will we know who's done it?
We won't. And the obvious conclusion to draw is it's a false flag, because then they will then roll out and say, and because of that, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, we're invading blah. That's what it'll be like.
How vulnerable are our ordinary homes, things like that?
Well, they're very vulnerable. I think what we saw in the fighting in Ukraine, where we saw some evidence of what the Russian military are capable of, the obvious thing for them to do is to knock out the electronics of the other side. And that they've been training for that for years.
OK, folks, don't say we didn't warn you. Time to sign off for the West Murdoch News at 7 now. Coming up, Arabian Nights. Thanks to old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers. Go to our show page for your comments and criticism this week, .org.uk. Dialects on Tuesday at noon, a Christmassy one. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable Christmas. Do join us for the politics show at the same time next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
The Hour, live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 7. The German leaders warning the country could face more terror attacks, but insists security is being stepped up. Angela Merkel's been responding to the death of Anis Amri, who was shot dead by police in Italy. He's suspected of driving a lorry into crowds at a Christmas market in Berlin and has links to extremists in Germany. But terrorism expert Chris Phillips says the country faces a big challenge.
They've got 7,000 people in Germany that they know of that are basically potential terrorists, and they certainly haven't got enough police officers to follow all those people.
Malta's Prime Minister says initial forensics show the weapons used in a hijacking of a...